You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 17, Maybe They Could Go to Neptune. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including, at last, some real details about TNG HD, First Contact being voted the most underrated TNG movie, Ethan Phillips talking about Neelix, some M&M's brand Star Trek figurines, and Brannon Braga's time on Star Trek. In the feature, we'll be joined by Mike Rittenhouse of Five Year Mission as we discuss IDW's new Star Trek ongoing comic series, where it may be headed, and how it may tie in to the next movie. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you coming off our bye week?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Life has been busy, and throwing many obstacles my way, but I'm glad to be back on the horse, at least somewhat, assuming this doesn't completely fail, and talking about Star Trek again.
That's right. Yeah, we're having a few technical difficulties here today, everyone, but we're going to hang in there. We're getting Scotty to just patch everything together for us.
I cannot do it, Captain. Okay.
This podcast is going to fly apart. All right.
Well, Geordi's rolling through a door as we speak.
Exactly. That's right. Geordi's doing a barrel roll, and that actually leads us into our first story. So good segue there. So, Greg, you know, we've been talking for a while about the next generation coming to Blu-ray and HD, and a lot's been happening just over the past week. And as I made our show notes page, new bits of information came out like 3 days in a row. I guess I've gone and updated the page three times. So much is happening here. Have you had a chance to catch some of the images that have been coming out for Next Generation?
Yeah, I did actually see the trailer that you have linked here. They don't show much. They do have the new computer-generated Enterprise-D flying away from screen, which looks very cool. And I think if you aren't completely familiar with the original opening, you might not even realize that it's been completely redone. But it is like really nice looking. I think there's like people in the windows, and it's really pristine. It's great.
It is, and like you said, you might not notice that it's redone at first. You sent me a link that you found of a comparison, still shot comparison.
Yeah, I should thank
the original
friend of the show 005 sent this in to us.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that was a great side by side, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And what they're doing, I think, is very well done, because, as you said, you don't really notice that it's been redone. Mm-hmm. It's a refinement. It's a very nice refinement. The noticeable things in the side-by-side were like the blue glow of the warp nacelles on the Enterprise D are put in digitally now. And there's so much more definition there, instead of it just being kind of like this blue blob.
Right.
Coming out, you can really feel like it's part of the warp in a cell.
Right. Now, what I'm a little confused about is, are they not doing what they did with TOS? Are they actually just using the original model shots, or are they redoing everything in computer graphics?
I'm not clear on that either. Whether that Enterprise is completely CGI, or whether they're just working with the model and enhancing it a bit. I guess we'll find out a little bit more over the coming weeks. I think more information at this point is going to start coming out now that we've had so much come out here at the start. I kind of get the impression that it's a CGI model. It's a CGI model of the Enterprise, not an actual physical model.
Right.
But I'm not sure on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible that they went back and found the original film that was shot and then actually recomposited it entirely for this, instead of doing a whole new computer-generated ship. The thing is, I don't know why they wouldn't have done that for the original series, if that's what they're doing with Next Gen, although maybe just because the models were higher quality, they figured they could do it this way. The effects were already good, just they looked kind of fuzzy.
Yeah, and they don't hold up at HD, you know, if you blow it up like that. Yeah, what you say there, it might be the case, because in that trailer, which we'll also put a link to, in the show notes for those who haven't seen it yet. The trailer really doesn't give much away at all in terms of what we're going to see. It just has that opening with the Enterprise warping out, you know, in the credits. But what they really do focus on is the boxes of the film.
Right.
And pulling out the film and doing the digital print. And that's what they're focusing on. So, yeah, maybe that's the case. They went back to the very, very original film as a starting point instead of completely recreating things like they did for some situations on TOS.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. Of course, the main thing I'm interested to see is Picard's computer-generated flute from The Inner Light. That's going to be really interesting to see.
Yeah, the computer-generated flute.
Okay. So what are the episodes? We have, as was rumored before, we have Encounter at Farpoint. They're doing The Inner Light and Sins of the Father, which was a Worf episode by Ronald D. Moore, if I recall correctly.
Right. I think they chose those maybe because it gives you a mix. Of course, the pilot, I think, is one of the episodes that needs the most work, actually, of any of them. The Inner Light won Hugo, I believe, for Best Dramatic Production, I think it
That's
was.
Right.
And Sins of the Father won for, I think it was an Emmy for art direction. So that's probably the reason for selecting those. And also having a Klingon episode. Mm-hmm. In that episode, do they go back to Kronos in that episode?
You know, I think they do. It's been a while since I saw Sins of the Father. I'm sort of watching along with Dork Trek, so I'm mired in the middle of season one right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. I saw their show title, Dead, 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 and I knew exactly what that one is going to be. Yeah, I was thinking Sins of the Father gives them a chance, you know, to work with the Klingons and some scenery that might be able to show off what we can expect from some of the remastered. Yeah, they're in the Klingon chamber.
Oh, right.
I believe in that episode, so... that could be a reason for choosing that one as well. I think it's exciting. Mm-hmm. I'm going to definitely pick up the sampler disc.
Do we have word on exactly when it will be released?
They said in the trailer it's January 2012.
Okay.
I don't think we have a date. Well, I saw something the other day. This was Amazon Germany, Amazon.de.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think they were the first ones to leak this cover image, from what I understand. And apparently there they had a release date listed of December 15th. I didn't see this on Amazon Japan or Amazon US.
Okay.
But in the trailer, at the end of the trailer, I think they say January 2012.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I think next year is the 25th anniversary of The Next Generation.
So it would make sense to release...
I imagine we'll get the whole...
It makes sense to release like season one in the fall and later the holiday season, and this will just give people a chance to like see it, get people talking about it, and maybe they can do sort of what the Star Wars 3D re-release is doing, and just release one every year, sort of on the anniversary of each season being released. That would be quite interesting.
What could be interesting? I don't see them doing that though. One every year, it would take them 7 years to get all the sets out, and that seems like stretching it out. But by then, Blu-ray won't even be around anymore,
true.
Probably.
But you think they're going to be able to release everything? So, I mean, the thing with TOS is there were only three seasons, and they started work on that pretty early. I wonder how far they are doing TNG.
I don't know. I don't think we'll see them all come out at the same time or anything like that. I think maybe we'll see a release schedule, kind of like we saw when they were releasing the DVD sets, where there's like a... 3 or 4 month period goes by between releases, something like that. I think they would want to release them all within a 2 year period.
Probably that's what they'd like to do.
Yeah, because you lose momentum if you stretch it out too much as well, I think.
Oh, certainly. And I'll definitely be interested to see what sort of deals they work out. Netflix with Hulu, with various HD cable channels, where exactly people will be able to see this first. I mean, maybe Epix will have TNG in HD first of all.
Could be. Yeah, I was thinking about that today too. You know, we have a channel here in Japan called Super Channel, and now it's Super Channel HD. They've been the primary channel over the years that shows Star Trek, and I was wondering if they were going to pick up TNG HD to show it. Now, the TOS HD comes on here on NHK, I believe, on the BS channels. It's like you have to pay, you know, it's not just the normal channels.
Right,
but you know, TOS kind of always gets kind of, I think it's more appealing to networks mm-hmm. than some of the later shows. So I don't know if we'll get TNG on there or not, but definitely will be interesting to find out where this stuff's going to air in addition to the discs themselves. Yeah. All right. Well, while we're on the topic of TNG, I wanted to get your opinion real quick on a poll. You know, StarTrek.com is always running polls, several polls per week. And one that they had going, I think it was last week, they were asking what is the most underrated TNG movie. A while back, I think it was the show when you were actually here at the studio with me, mm-hmm. we talked about the most underrated TOS movie.
Right.
And for TNG movie, the winner of the poll was First Contact, which I just didn't get because underrated means that the movie...
Right.
You know, isn't held so highly and it doesn't get the love that it deserves. And this was just an odd result for me. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think people might have been voting just because for what they thought was like the best one. Like, you know, whatever it is, it must be underrated because it's so good. But I mean, really, everyone agrees that First Contact is the best TNG movie by far. And I don't know. I for most underrated for me, it would be between Generations and Nemesis. Both of them, I'm not huge fans of either movie. I'd probably actually go with Nemesis because there's mm-hmm. just bits of that I really like, and you know, it's popular to really hate on it, just like Enterprise. You know, it's the worst Star Trek movie ever.
Yeah.
But it's clearly not. It just has some problems.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, I thought it was odd, and I tweeted about it, and I got a reply from someone, and they said that First Contact was it was so good that it could have revived Star Trek, but it suffered from poor PR and low exposure, and I didn't get that either because it was released at the peak of Star Trek's popularity, had huge PR, fantastic reviews. And I think it even hung around in theaters, you know, longer than it might otherwise have. Yeah. So I didn't get that either.
I mean, the problem was Insurrection was just such a letdown. They sort of
cruised
into Insurrection and didn't keep that momentum going. It wasn't First Contact's fault at all.
Yeah. No, I wonder if the person that replied to me was thinking about Insurrection because
it's possible.
For me, my most underrated TNG movie is Insurrection. Mm. Because I think that it is a possibly of the Next Generation movies, it's possibly the one that is the most true to the Next Generation and the most true to Star Trek, the core ideals of Star Trek over the years.
Okay, that makes
sense. In terms of its storytelling and its message and all. And it definitely, you know, doesn't get any love, and it did terribly at the box office.
Certainly.
So
yeah.
That's my pick.
Yeah, I mean...
For most underrated.
You know, one of those, you know, one of them that's not First Contact would definitely get my vote. I think what we can definitely agree on is that First Contact is not underrated. It's, if anything, overrated.
Right.
It's actually, when I go back and watch it, it's not the super perfect film that I like to think it was. They do spend a little bit too much time in Montana, and the Borg Queen was a kind of bad idea. But I mean, it is a good movie, and everyone sort of agrees that it is. So,
well, the one thing I can say is that you can never spend too much time in Montana. So, all right. Well, what else do we have up on the docket here today in Star Trek News?
Yeah, we have something that's actually a really interesting topic to me, which is the IDW Star Trek series, which I believe we'll be talking about in just a little while. Star Trek Ongoing Number 1, which is the first issue from the long-awaited sort of Star Trek reboot, where they're taking original TOS episodes and sort of showing how they're done in the new Abramsverse, which makes certain friends of ours on Twitter extremely happy to see JJ getting so much love. Yes. So I do love this.
Exactly. I think that the response is always hiss.
Hiss, hiss, hiss. Yeah. So they've got Mike Johnson writing this comic, and they're definitely, I mean, they're running away with it. They've got Chris Pine and Zach Quinto and all these the likenesses of everybody on it. It's a great series so far, and I'm looking forward to 2, 3, and 4, which I guess 4 was just announced as coming out in December. Is that right?
Yeah. So talking about these, what's coming up is, for those of you who haven't already picked up number one, definitely pick that up. It's an interesting comic. And number 2, 3, and 4 are going to be coming out. And two is set to come out, well, by the time we release this episode this month, which will be October. And number 3 is out in November, I believe, and number 4 in December.
Right. It's actually a little hard for me to get used to this monthly comic release schedule, because I'm used to TV, where you get a new episode every week. But I picked up Star Trek number 1 last week, and I guess it's going to be 3 weeks until number 2 comes out.
Yeah, and with these, you're basically getting half of an episode.
Yep.
So you're waiting a month to get the next half of the episode.
Right.
So it's a little tough to wait, but maybe that's why. I guess just like I do with TV shows, I often wait for things to come out and I go back and watch them or read them after they've been out for a while.
But yeah, certainly this is going to make a great trade paperback in a year or two, where they're going to be able to collect 6 or 10 episodes, and you can just read them all at once. That's going to be really fantastic. I'll probably pick that up, even though I'm going to be buying the comics as they come out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is a way to do it. And that's another thing that's coming out, actually, in December from IDW. Mm-hmm. It's a TNG, 104-page TNG collection titled The Gorn Crisis, which is, I believe, a comic that goes back to 2001, so it's not new stuff, but
right.
It's being collected together into this one volume called The Gorn Crisis, selling for $15.99. So that's not bad. I mean, that's how much are paper books in the States these days anyway?
Yeah,
around $10 or so, aren't they?
Yeah, that's about right. And no, it's good that IDW is reprinting some of their older stuff. Now they're getting a little bit more Star Trek fans coming in looking for the new ongoing, which did actually sell out of the first printing. So obviously it is making quite an impact.
I think it sold out on the first day, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was able to find some copies, so it didn't sell through like entirely, but IDW definitely sold all of their copies to comic stores, with the comic stores assuming that they were going to be selling them. And I think there were maybe 2 copies left and in my local shop, and only 1 with the cover I wanted. So they're definitely moving quickly.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. It's always good
to
see some kind of renewed excitement about Star Trek, whether it be TV, movies, comics, or whatever.
Yeah,
it is, and
it's possibly a halo effect from the DC New 52 reboot, which we'll be talking about on our other podcast, which is Mythical, where we discuss comics. But I think you have a lot of people in comic shops right now for the DC comics, and they're seeing, oh, look at that new Star Trek comic, and picking that up as well. So it's a really good timing from IDW.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right. So just a quick rundown of what everyone can expect. Ongoing number 2 is going to wrap up the Gary Mitchell storyline from Where No Man Has Gone Before. And then 3 and 4 in November, December is going to be a reimagining of the Galileo 7. And those will both be 32-page books as well for $3.99. And there is the TNG one that we mentioned. There's also, if you prefer your TOS in the Prime timeline, there's going to be a 100-page TOS Spectacular coming out. And there's also going to be a couple of more of this kind of odd, as we've talked about before, Legion of Superheroes crossover thing that's going on. So
yeah, I may need to flip through that and try to get some idea of what's going on. I talked with a guy at the comic store, and he basically told me he has no idea either. Like, it's the weirdest thing he's ever heard of.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we'll I have to kind of look in to see what is the popularity of that.
Yeah.
How is it doing?
Yeah.
I haven't really seen any information on how it's really selling.
Yeah.
But But for comic fans, this is what you can look forward to coming up over the next 3 months.
Yeah, it's exciting.
So, Greg, moving forward in the Star Trek timeline here, why don't we jump over to Voyager for a minute? There was a fairly short little talk that the Morton Report had with Ethan Phillips, who everyone knows as Neelix from Star Trek Voyager. And in that little interview, kind of talked about how his role was on Voyager and how Neelix was more of a secondary character on the show. And I think, you know, he's probably pretty accurate in what he's saying there. What were your feelings about Neelix on Voyager as part of the Voyager cast and crew?
Oh, sorry. I was just finishing steeping my Leola root tea. What were you talking about? Oh, Neelix, of course. I really like Neelix. He seems to get a lot of hate from people who even kind of like Voyager. He's definitely what they call a horseradish character, in that a little bit goes a long way. Sometimes when they had an episode that was completely focused on Neelix, it was not so good. But when he had a role in the episode and he actually made a difference, I really liked when he showed up. You know, if you sort of compare him with Phlox, you know, I prefer Phlox. Compare him with, Worf, I probably prefer Worf. But, you know, I think he was really good. He was sort of the Pocahontas of Voyager, where he was supposedly going to be, you know, guiding them through the Delta Quadrant. But he did have some knowledge and he was able to help them out, especially early on. I think part of the problem is they just didn't know quite what to do with this character, especially after Kes left.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think his role as guiding them through the Delta Quadrant was, I mean, that had a limited shelf life because as they moved further away.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, you know, he didn't have a starship with warp 9 engines. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not familiar with the entire Delta Quadrant. So that was only going to go so far.
Yeah.
And he apparently didn't have the magic Kazon engines that enabled them to chase Voyager for far longer than they should have been able to. And for those who say, well, the Kazon were spread out, I will remind you that it wasn't just that. It was the same Kazon who kept following the same people kept following them around.
The Kazon, of course, the Delta Quadrant Oompa Loompas.
Yeah, the Delta Quadrant Oompa Loompas. That's right. Or as Larry Nemechek said, some of the crew also called them Junkyard Klingon, which... I think it's very accurate because I've always called them a poor man's Klingon.
Yeah.
But at any rate, back to Neelix.
Right.
Here, what Nathan Phillips did say about the character here is that, you know, he says he's not sure that the writers ever really knew where the character of Neelix was going or what they were going to do with him. It's just sometimes he featured big in a story and then there were stretches where you wouldn't see him very much.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't sound bitter. You know, like sometimes we hear these actors who didn't have as big of a role in the show as they would like to have, and they seem very bitter about it afterwards. And he didn't seem like that at all.
No, it does sound like he enjoyed his time and just would have liked to have been able to do more with the character, which is understandable. I did want to ask you what you thought of the way they wrapped up Neelix. Obviously, he actually didn't go back to Earth with the rest of the crew.
Yeah. Wow, that's a good question. I don't know if I have any real strong feelings about it either way, but when I watched the Voyager finale the first time, well, he wasn't in the finale, right? It was like the episode before the finale.
Yeah, it was penultimate or the one before that, yeah.
Yeah, where he actually left. I think I was kind of felt a little bit disappointed that he stayed behind. Kind of wanted to see him hang in there with the crew. Of course, I also wanted the series to end with Voyager not getting home.
Right.
I wanted them to be left in the Delta Quadrant. I just think that would have been a little bit better. It's not that, you know, magic ending that it was so predictable that they're going to get home. But as for Neelix, but I kind of felt good for him too, you know, that he found another Talaxian and even a child, you know, to kind of have a family. Was kind of a nice finish for him. I don't know.
Yeah.
I never really felt very strongly either way. I wasn't upset or or overly happy either,
right,
on that, which I guess kind of reflects the role of Neelix on the show, you know, where I never became invested in Neelix, yep, in any way, really.
You know, I think that's the part of, yeah, the problem. Like, I mean, they had kind of a weak ending for what ended up being kind of a weak character, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I think if you take Neelix out of the show, I think that you would miss something, though. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was like a superfluous character that was just there. He did play an important part in the show, but definitely it was a secondary role for sure.
Yeah.
But he did do more than mourn on Deep Space Nine. So,
well, yeah, Neelix talks whenever the camera's on. Mourn only talks when the camera's off. So that's the main,
right,
difference.
Yeah,
between,
yeah, Mourn never shuts up when the camera's off, right?
Indeed.
They're like, Mourn, give us a rest already. You told us that story last week.
That's right. So speaking of little guys that never shut up, this is a story you found that I did not see. It's M&M brand Star Trek figurines, and it looks like those M&M guys from those annoying commercials wearing Star Trek uniforms. Please explain this to me, Chris.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we have to thank our friends over at TrekNews.net for pulling up this story. I found this over there. I just threw this in here because I thought it was kind of interesting. It's, and maybe because when I was younger, my grandparents, my uncle liked to buy all just every kind of little knickknack you can find, you know, shops like Spencer's, gift shops were a favorite of his. Mm-hmm. And he often had these M&M, plastic M&M characters around, or plush M&M characters.
Right.
It's always M&M something going on. So when I saw this M&M characters in Star Trek uniforms, mm-hmm, I thought, well, it's kind of an unusual thing here. And I wanted to show you because I wanted to find out how quickly you were going to rush out and buy these. Because now that you're back in the States, I know you're really looking for things like this. It's a collection of 4-inch high plastic, I think they're plastic, M&M,
yeah,
characters. There's one of Kirk sitting in the captain's chair from the original Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And this Kirk is being played by Spokescandy Red, mm-hmm, as Captain James T. Kirk. And then they're going to go on and release quite a few of these. The next one is To Boldly Go Where No Man Has Gone Before. Actually, no, that's related to the Kirk one. The second one is going to be called Live Long and Prosper.
Right.
And the third one is Bad News, Gentlemen, which I'm not sure what that is. Maybe it's either you're wearing a red shirt on this mission or it's Scotty calling up to say that the engines are about to fall apart.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I guess they're just going to do, I'm going to assume the second one is going to be Spock and maybe the, I don't know, one of the other Spokescandies playing Spock. And I don't know. I mean, this is for the diehard Star Trek / candy enthusiast.
Especially the fourth one, which is going to be called I Melt for No One, which I don't know, Tholians?
Something
I don't
like that.
I started to say Horta, but I guess Horta can melt, right? At least
right.
They can melt walls.
Possibly.
Well, it's a very unusual little collectible, so we'll put a note. In the show notes, we'll have links. We'll have some images of these, some more information. They're going to sell for $29.99, and they're coming from the Hamilton collection. Mm-hmm. And they are officially licensed, yeah, by CBS and Mars, the candy company, the not candy, the planet.
Right. Oh, man.
All right. So one more story for today's news. And this is comes from another interview with Star Trek cast and crew. And it's another shout out to our friends at TrekNews.net who compiled a nice little kind of a condensed version of an interview that Brannon Braga had done, I believe with StarTrek.com. About his time with the franchise, not just with any particular show. And, you know, this is one of the favorite things of fans to kind of jump on,
yeah,
Brannon Braga, especially, and Rick Berman for killing the franchise. I think sometimes forgetting just, of course, Rick Berman was there from almost the very beginning of The Next Generation, mm-hmm. and Brandon Braga was there for 15 years.
And Berman was picked by Roddenberry, like 18. Handpicked to do it.
Yeah, right. And this was an interesting little interview for me because Braga came off a little bit more defensive than usual in some of his responses here.
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah, like, I mean, we sort of have the thing where every time J.J. Abrams gets interviewed, they ask him when the new Star Trek movie is coming out, and he wants to talk about the other things he's doing that aren't Star Trek related, and no one wants to ask him about that. And I think Braga might have the same problem because of how connected he is with Star Trek. He has a lot of questions. People have a lot of questions for him, and you know, he wants to promote this new show Terra Nova that he's working on, but instead he has to talk about why he killed Star Trek. And I don't think that's a conversation anyone wants to have. So what he did say,
especially,
is that
not over and over, right?
Exactly. I mean, he sort of says, you know, he says, "I will take full responsibility for any flawed or downright bad storytelling or creative decisions that hurt the franchise." Which, I mean, okay, he takes credit. He takes the responsibility for it. I mean, he can also take credit for,
yeah, as our friend Spicer Nerd would say, he's manning up.
Right.
Right.
Man up, Braga. And but I just think if he's taking responsibility for Enterprise, you know, he can also take credit for First Contact and for all the good episodes, yeah, of Enterprise and so much of the other things he did for the franchise. I mean, you make decisions, you make the best decisions you can, and you know, they're not always going to connect with the biggest segment of the fan community.
Yeah, exactly. I think people tend to focus on the negatives in situations like this, I think. And of course, there are going to be some episodes that Brandon Braga wrote that aren't great. But, you know, anyone who writes, anyone who's creative, a designer, yeah, a writer, you know, a filmmaker, anybody, I mean, you're going to do good work and you're going to do not so good work. And sometimes you're going to do bad work. You know, the pure gems actually within a body of work are always few and far between, mm-hmm. you know, the true gems in what you do. I think that Brandon Braga was responsible for a lot of what allowed Star Trek to become as popular as it was in the mid-1990s. And certainly Brandon Braga, and certainly Rick Berman was as well. Mm-hmm. And people tend to kind of dismiss that and only focus on Enterprise largely. I mean, right, all boils down to Enterprise, really. He mentions in here that, well, he says that there are just some real haters out there, and there are some people who will go back and say, well, look at Braga's work on TNG. If you really look at it, that sucked too.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of unfair because, yeah, those people were not saying that it sucked at the time.
Right,
they're going
right,
back now,
exactly,
and saying, oh yeah, I didn't like Enterprise, so yeah, he also did crap on TNG,
yeah,
which isn't true.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's really not true, but...
Yeah, there's
what I found interesting here. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say it is interesting that there is a sort of post Star Trek curse that Braga had Threshold and Flash Forward, which were both canceled after the first season. Terra Nova, we can, you know, probably expect that to get canceled after the first season because now I've talked about it on our show.
that's right, Greg. You've done it again, or you will do it again.
We'll do it again
in a time warp.
Yeah. And Ronald D. Moore has had maybe six pilots that got made that were not picked, yeah, up by the networks. He has a new one in the works, Hangtown, which now will not get picked up now that I've talked about it on the show. So it's kind of got to be frustrating for these guys to have had success, you know, to some extent on Star Trek, and then to leave Star Trek and suddenly maybe lose their safety net in a way, and just find that,
yeah,
that trying to do sci-fi outside of the Star Trek bounds is really, really, really hard. And maybe they should have pushed
true.
Maybe harder, yeah, to get more Star Trek on the air, because that's a way to do Star Trek on network TV, because it's really hard to do. I mean, people want to watch it, but not enough. Anyway, interesting aside there.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, doing science fiction is difficult. I mean, if you look, the majority of science fiction shows that come out on TV all fail. Very few make it, and it is a really tough business. Maybe a little bit of a curse there for him, and The other interesting thing I just found in here too was just kind of the, it was almost like he's had enough of hearing about Star Trek. And not having enough of Star Trek. I mean, he even mentions how much he loves Star Trek and he wouldn't have spent 15 years doing it if it weren't in his blood and the most passionate thing in his life. At this point, I think you're right. Maybe he's just kind of tired of hearing the rehash of Star Trek at the end and his involvement in it. And it was, we'll put a link here. People can go read it. Just kind of the responses. I think he's right in what he says. The tone of it was a little bit more defensive than what I'm used to hearing him say.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I am enjoying Terra Nova. I do hope it does not get canceled. But there's absolutely no Star Trek in it. Like you could not assume that someone was going to go from Star Trek to doing this show. So he has some range to it, and he's definitely looking to branch out and do different sorts of things and not get stuck into the rut that you possibly could have expected.
Following the success of J.J. Abrams' movie in 2009 and leading into the sequel, IDW, the comics publisher, has launched a new comic series focused on the Abramsverse, in which they're retelling some of the original series' tales with the alternate timeline crew. And today we're going to talk about that comic series as well as where this could be leading us with the timelines. And of course, I have Greg with me. And also today we're joined by Mike Rittenhouse of 5-Year Mission. Hi, Mike. How are you today?
I'm doing good.
Good. We're glad to have you with us. So I think we've all picked up this comic. And Mike, you are the comic shop guy here. So why don't you tell us first, what were your first impressions of this new series from IDW?
Well, when I heard it was coming out, I wasn't really sure if it was going to be something I would like, since I'm such a original series fan. And I like the J.J. Abrams movie, but I thought that once they changed the timeline, that it wouldn't make sense for them to go on all of the same missions as the original timeline. But once I read the comic, I thought it was pretty cool because it kind of was a combination. Like it told the same story, but it was the things have changed in the story. Like Dr. Elizabeth Dinner was not in the story. She apparently she transferred to a different ship or something. So like she's not even part of the story now. And so obviously it's going to have a different ending, and the characters are acting a little more like the J.J. Abrams characters. So it's kind of cool. I like the fact that it wasn't just about Where No Man Has Gone Before. It actually picked up on a few things from the movie and continued the story of what was happening with that. So so far I like it. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. What about you, Greg?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. I was a little more excited about the prospect of the series when I first heard about it. I like the idea that the Abramsverse isn't just completely writing over everything that happened originally. We can sort of assume that these new characters went on basically the same adventures as before. Maybe the next movie will change things even more, but at least in the comic series, we're sort of seeing some of the same things go on. I really love the art. That's one thing I talked about early on, hoping it was going to be really good. I know, Chris, you and a lot of other fans aren't a big fan of the look of the ship, but I think in these comic pages, it's actually drawn really nicely, and the angles they pick do show off the ship pretty nicely. And also the sets. I don't know what you call them when it's in a comic, but the Enterprise sets look really great. Like, they're all white and glowy, and you know, there's no lens flares or shaky cameras, so you get
no
a real
lens
sense.
Flares in the comic.
Exactly. I'm sure there's lens flares in here somewhere, but in general, you're able to get more of a sense of the space than you were in the movies, which is really nice.
It's coming later in like issue 18 when they redo the Doomsday Machine, but it's going to be called the Lens Flare Machine. Yeah, you know, I agree with you about the ship. I was actually thinking when I was reading the comic, I was thinking that, you know, the ship looks quite nice in here. I'm not a big fan of the ship, of that ship design in the movie, but it does look good in the comic form.
Yeah.
It doesn't look quite as unbalanced as it does in the movie, which is my problem with it. But yeah, I found this comic interesting. I was kind of skeptical as well, because I grew up with TOS and the idea of them reimagining those original series stories was, I thought, a little bit odd. So I was curious to see where they were going to go with it. And Mike, like you said, there are some things that are changed. What I notice about it is there are subtle changes. I mean, I guess Daner not being on the ship is a major change, but then there are a lot of subtle changes as well. But otherwise, they do seem to be kind of following the story pretty straight. There's some dialogue that's actually lifted exactly out of the episode. It's the exact line spoken at the exact moment. And then there's some stuff that's just completely new, the way things unfold.
Another issue I had with it that I forgot to mention was that the movie supposedly started them on their mission with Kirk earlier in the timeline than he would have actually taken Captain of the Enterprise. So I was wondering, you know, I was kind of concerned, like, how are they going to make this work, you know, if some of these missions are taking place a couple of years before they would have. You know, I mean, why would they end up in that exact same situation? You know, like, I mean, it just so happens that this one is working out that way. But, you know, I was just concerned about that, you know, the fact that it's not even the same, like, year as when it should, you know.
Right.
I forgot to mention that, so.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, why were they sent, like, at this point, why were they sent to the edge of the galaxy, especially with Scotty saying, you know, the ship's falling apart, they need to go to a starbase and be completely rebuilt. Why would Federation Starfleet send them to the edge of the galaxy? You know, it never really made much sense on the original series why they would have done that, but it makes even less sense when it's a new crew and a ship that's falling apart.
Right.
Because
on
the
original series episode, the ship isn't falling apart. They're just on a mission to the edge of the galaxy. Well, But in the comic, yeah, Scotty says that the ship is falling apart, and yeah, you do wonder, like, well, why are you going to the edge of the galaxy, in that situation?
Maybe they could go to Neptune or something.
Go to Neptune, yeah, where no man has gone before, to Neptune. okay, that'll be a very interesting comic we would have there. The first series, they're just going to go to every planet, right? The next one. Well, I wonder. So, a few other little differences here. Like, I think in the original series episode, there was supposed to be a case where, like, Kirk say something like he almost married Dana at one point in the past? And then...
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
In the comic, and of course, McCoy's not in the original episode. We have Dr. Piper. In the comic, though, apparently they allude to that McCoy and Dana had some romantic involvement in the past. So there are kind of these little small changes taking place in there as well. But they still find the same probe.
Yeah, I think it might be they're doing a thing where, because Bones is on the ship, Daner's not on the ship. And because Daner's not on the ship, things with Mitchell are going to go different, which is interesting that for them to think about it. You know, obviously they've had some meetings. They've sat down with Bob Borky. They've said, you know, What changes could we make? What can we do to show the fans that we're thinking about, like, how things would be different while still doing basically the same story. And like I was trying to say earlier, it's kind of like the DC Universe reboot in that things are basically history as you remembered it. But there's important differences, and you sort of have to just read to find out what those differences are.
Yeah, that's probably the case. So, Mike, from a comic standpoint, what are your thoughts about, you know, the production of the comic and the artwork and the dialogue and so forth?
Well, I definitely agree with Greg that the art is good. I think that that artist is doing a very good job. I mean, I think it, overall it's very good. All of the IDW Star Trek comics have been good. I think the dialogue is. I mean, it's all good. It's. I mean, as far as just, you know, a comic book, it's a good read, and you know, I wasn't bored, or you know, I didn't think that some of the panels looked wrong or silly or anything. You know, it flowed really well.
There was one panel I thought Kirk was a little bit too toothy, though. There's like a close-up of his mouth, and there's just teeth coming at you at one point.
I'll have to go back and look for that one.
Yeah, I cut it out and pinned it on my wall. I agree on the dialogue. You know, often when you read comics or novels, the author just doesn't quite nail the dialogue, so the characters don't seem like themselves, and it can be very distracting to the story. And in this comic, I really thought that the characters, the dialogue was really well done, that the voices were very proper, and it really sounded like the characters. So I felt like I was in the story and the ship with them.
Yeah, an interesting thing is that sort of as I was reading, I had voices in my head, and the voices were from the new movie. I wasn't thinking of these characters as the ones from the original show.
Yeah, same, you know, for me too.
Sorry, Scotty sounds like, I forget his name, but Scotty sounds like
Simon
the new
Simon
Scotty.
Pegg.
And exactly, it sounds like Simon Pegg, and Spock sounds like Zach Quinto. They're definitely written in the style of the new movie. They are these new characters. They didn't just go back and watch the old show, write a new script, and draw it to look like the new people. They really thought about how are these characters different, and how would these new characters, even though they're the same people we remember, how would they react to these situations? And they, I'm really impressed that they got their voices through. I mean, they're doing funny things, like having Scotty say, you know, Kine instead of, you know, cannot, and what's his name? Chekhov says like Kipton and all of that. But it really goes a long way towards making it sound in your head like it should be, and not making you do that work of saying, oh, well, it's Chekhov. Yeah. So when he says captain, it sounds like Kepton. It's a nice little shorthand.
Well, you know, to that end, I also found that when Uhura and Spock had their little romantic scene when the ship's on fire, that I really felt like it was Zachary Quinto checking on Zoe Saldana.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, okay, just to that point, it just because another thing that I want to talk about is, you know, where this might be leading, because they have said that these have direct tie-ins to the next movie. And what I noticed in the comic, it happened pretty early on. I mean, they go through the galactic barrier and, you know, the ship is damaged. And then they cut over and Kirk is yelling like, all stations, fire alert. And then there's a panel of Spock and Uhura. And Spock is saying, oh, Niota. And Uhura's like, oh, I'm fine. And I was thinking, you know, I'm really hoping that Uhura's character is not going to continue to just be check on Spock when something goes wrong. I'm hoping that Uhura's character is going to develop into a real character. And so seeing that early in the comic, it kind of gave me pause, like, you know, are they going to continue with this? Or, I mean, I don't mind if Spock and Uhura have a relationship, but I don't want Uhura to just be there to kiss and hug Spock all the time.
Yeah, well, I think this comic definitely focused on Kirk, Spock, Bones, and Mitchell. Scotty was sort of in there just to be in there. I don't even know his name, but Scotty's little helper got no more.
Yeah, I don't know his name either. That little guy.
No more advancement than he did in the show itself. And yeah, Uhura's barely in it at all, Chekhov. So hopefully as the show goes on, as the comic goes on, we will get that character development, especially from Uhura. I definitely agree.
Well, where do you think they might go with... So the first one, we get about halfway through the original series episode, and then number one is finished, and it's to be continued. So when number two comes out here in October, are you expecting to get the same resolution? I mean, it has to be a little bit different, because since Daynor's not there, you know, right. in the original episode, Daynor basically, well, weakens Mitchell to the point that Kirk is finally able to defeat him. So where do you think they might go with this? Or where would you want to see them go with this, maybe?
That's a really good question. And since Daynor's not there, it's really hard to say. Because obviously Mitchell is still on the same path. So, you know, what are they going to do to derail that without her help? I mean, I'm really at a loss, because I mean, I'm not sure like what I would do or what I would do differently in this different timeline. I would assume that since Kirk and Mitchell are such good friends that, you know, maybe they're going to resolve it diplomatically rather than just, you know, crushing him with a boulder.
That would be interesting. And also for the times, I mean, now in 2011, you might see a resolution like that, as opposed to the 60s, where I think, you know, crushing him with the boulder would have the big fight scene. You know, you have to have the big fight scene.
Right.
Was definitely the way that it obviously had to go.
I mean, I'd be disappointed if it didn't have Kirk and Mitchell going at it. I mean, and they really did have a fist fight in the original, if I recall correctly. That's part of what the network said, is to, you know, get the captain punching somebody.
Yeah, and every episode, and they, right?
Every episode. Get his shirt off, get him punching somebody.
Bar fight!
Have him kiss somebody. Well, you know, and, you know, that's part of it. Maybe Chris Pine's just that much stronger than Shatner. He can take Mitchell by himself.
Maybe. Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see if they end up on Delta Vega and they end up with, you know, are we going to have a panel that has a tombstone that says James R. Kirk on it? you know, where's it going to go? Because the first, I was a little bit disappointed in number one, because I felt like they were maybe playing the story a little bit too straight, in terms of they find the Valiant, the probe, you know, same number of people get killed, they bring it on, Mitchell gets the silver in his eyes and everything. But yeah, in number two, maybe we will see that kind of departure in the timeline, since Daynor's not there and they have to do something differently.
Yeah, I feel like what they're going to do is set up each episode, each comic, as being similar to the original, but sort of show in the first issue a few major differences, like Daynor not being there, like Spock and Uhura being involved, like the ships falling apart. And then what we're going to see in part two is where that really leads, and we're going to have to see a brand new resolution, even though the beginning is going to be the same. You know, I think the same thing is going to be true in Galileo 7, when we get to Space Seed eventually. All these episode comics, you know, they've got to have a drastically different resolution. But to be recognizable to the fans, they've got to have a beginning that is similar to what we've seen already.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I still think it's a little bit strange to go through these episodes. I do wonder if they're going to ever throw in any new stories, or if it's just going to be these TOS reimaginings the whole time. Have you heard anything along those lines?
Yeah, and that would be a question that I'd want to ask somebody from IDW if we could get them on the show. I can't imagine they don't want to do original stories, but you know, I think to get the fans reading it, especially for the first few issues, they're going to want to stick with episodes stick with doing shows. It seems a little strange to me they're doing the Galileo 7, because it's not one of the more well-known TOS episodes. I would have thought they would start with like the big ones, and maybe, you know, do. I'm trying to think of what the bigger episodes from the first season are, but yeah, I would expect
the City on the Edge of Forever is the
City on the Edge
biggest,
of Forever. Thank you. That's the one I was trying to think of. I expect more of those. Maybe they're going to do a lot of character development with the Galileo 7. That makes a lot of sense. But I expect, I have not heard either way, but I expect once they get a few episodes out of the way, they're going to throw in a comic here or there that's just a completely new thing, especially when we get closer to the new movie. I mean, we've got to see something similar to Countdown for the movie, and it surely is just going to be a part of ongoing rather than starting up a whole new lead up to Star Trek II comic series. You know, they can just have Star Trek ongoing, have a few issues that lead into the movie, and then, you know, the next month it can just be leading out of the movie. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do with that.
Yeah, for sure. So for the next ones, for the Galileo 7, I think if they want to really throw things for a loop and really change things up, one thing they could do is to not have Spock on the shuttle. What do you think about that?
Oh, that could be interesting. Yeah, what do you think of that, Mike? I've been talking a lot.
that would definitely show the fans that it's not going to be the same stories, and that would be very interesting. Like, who would be in his place, you think? Like, I mean, like, well, I guess what if, you know, Spock stayed on the ship and Kirk went on the mission to check out the nebula?
Ah, we could do that, and then Kirk gets to decide who they're going to eat so that the ship is light enough that they can take off again. All right.
Did you say who they're going to eat?
Yeah. That episode, it always, they have that dialogue in there where they're trying to figure out how to reduce the weight of the shuttle
right. So
they can take off again. And it always reminds me of a Monty Python sketch where they're in the boat, you know, and they're trying to figure out how to... They have to reduce the weight. So anyway, it always reminds me of that. So. And Spock, you know, he'll make the logical decision.
Right.
You know, based on, you know, muscle content. I don't know. So do some calculations. Well, so another question I guess I have in all this is that Greg, a minute ago you said that you mentioned the IDW Countdown series, which was a lead-in to the 2009 movie.
Right.
And in the promotion of this comic series, they have been saying that these tie in directly to the next movie, which has really had my mind going, trying to figure out what they're doing in the next movie. And if you look at the episode selection, now we have Where No Man Has Gone Before, we have Gary Mitchell, the Galileo 7, I don't see any clear thread that you would pick up, you know, as something that would be the basis for a major motion picture out of that. So where do you think they're going? What are the threads here that you think they might be picking up on to play off into the next movie?
Yeah, I think it's really hard to tell from issue one what they're going to be doing for the movie. Basically, all I'm seeing them do is so far just do the original show, and I don't see much leading into anything. So I think it's really, a lot of it's going to depend on what we see in issue two. You know, if it does end up just being whatever the original show's ending was. And then we're going to have to see if Galileo 7 picks up right from issue two, or if it's like, sort of the big red reset button of all the shows, where the new show starts and you don't have to have seen anything before. You know, will ongoing be actually ongoing, or will it be self-contained? And then we can start to see, oh, there is an arc going on. You know, we're starting to see maybe Kirk and Spock are going to be butting up against each other, or maybe we're going to see their friendship really deepen. We're going to have to see Chekhov. Is Chekhov ever going to be a real character? Is he ever going to do anything that anyone finds interesting? If he does, maybe that will be leading into the next movie where we see Chekhov deepen a little bit and Sulu and see more of these characters that in the first movie kind of got a short shrift.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Mike, have you heard what episodes might be coming after the Galileo 7? Do you have any word on what might be coming down the line?
I don't. I haven't had much of a chance to read in the order books. Like, a lot of times I'll have the descriptions of what the comics are about, but I haven't had a chance to read beyond the first few issues to see what they've got coming up.
Okay. I was wondering what episodes they might go to next? You know, we mentioned The City on the Edge of Forever as being one of the big episodes, mm-hmm. but of course, then you've got time travel. You've got an alternate universe, right, and you've got time travel going on both. So, I think, you know, Space Seed certainly would be one. I think that we mentioned a minute ago as well.
Yeah. Well, let's say we could pick, we could each pick one show from the original series from probably season one, other than Where No Man's Gone Before, other than Galileo 7, what show would you like to see them do in the comic?
Good question. So, Mike, what would you want to see if you can pick one episode from, say, the first season?
That's really hard one. I mean, I would say maybe like Charlie X, but since they're doing Where No Man Has Gone Before, it's a very similar premise. Similar. So, I would want to want them to have to repeat themselves. I don't know, maybe something like A Taste of Armageddon or Mary or something like that. Arena would also be a lot of fun. See Chris Pine take on the Gorn.
Arena would be fun, yeah.
Yeah, that for would be sure. good. Yeah, I was going to say Arena would be definitely one I would say. I don't know how different it would be. And the thing about Arena is if you watch it, not that much actually happens in the episode. You know, half of it's them just watching Kirk fight the Gorn on TV.
Yeah.
So they I think they'd have to find some new subplots to insert into it, which actually could be really good, could add a lot to it. And the other one I'd love to see is The Enemy Within. You know, it's one of my favorite TOS episodes. And I'd love to see sort of Chris Pine Kirk split into good and bad and see where they go with that.
Well, here are a few thoughts from me. I'm not going to stick to just one because actually I'm kind of thinking through season one. I'm thinking which episodes would be good if you wanted to pick up threads to carry over into a movie. One I'm thinking about is The Naked Time because you could pick up, you could create this... a situation for Spock where he has to work through the kind of loss of control, especially the J.J. Abrams Spock, I think, is maybe more prone to the human emotional side than the original series Spock was. So that's something. Of course, if they wanted to do a Harry Mudd story, there's Mudd's Women, although I'm really hoping that they don't go... I don't want to see the Harry Mudd route in the next movie myself. There's always the menagerie because we do still have Pike around.
Yeah.
So they, you know, might be able to do something there, especially if they did something in the comics to get him in the situation where he has now been, you know, crippled like he is in the menagerie. And then in the movie, they kind of carry through that story. Could be a possibility.
Another interesting thing that they could do is have them go to Talos 4 and meet the Talosians for the first time with Kirk being in Pike's shoes and not do the menagerie but do the cage.
Do the cage with Kirk. Oh, that could be really interesting actually.
Yeah, that could be interesting. That would be close enough that events are kind of playing out, but then you have that twist of how the timeline has been changed. And like you said earlier, you know, these things are happening a few years before they're really supposed to be happening in terms of the prime timeline. So it could kind of put Kirk, the timing could be Kirk is now in Pike's shoes, right?
Right.
Yeah, that could be interesting.
I actually, now that you mentioned that, I can't imagine them not doing that. That's such a perfect idea. So,
well, maybe they won't do it and then we'll do it as our own fan movie, right?
Actually, you know, right there is the second movie.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Well, that's why. I mean,
giant brain aliens, you know, that goes over with the kids today, right?
That's why, you know,
we can punch somebody.
Everyone keeps asking why there's been a delay in the script. And what they don't want to admit is that they've been consulting with Mike here about this for the past 6 months. And, you know, they're having to do some rewrites. And Mike just let the cat out of the bag there a little bit, I think. All right. You heard it here first on The Ready Room. The next JJ movie is The Cage, featuring Captain James T. Kirk. Okay, so I guess to maybe wrap up here. Just some final thoughts on a couple of items. One, comics as lead-ins to movies. You know, we know Bad Robot liked, with Lost, they liked to have a lot of supplemental material with books or website, things going on to kind of supplement what was happening on the TV show. And now that they're doing Star Trek, you know, we saw it with the Star Trek countdown before the last movie, and now we see it happening again here. How do you feel about this? Kind of, we're being taken out of the self-contained movie and we're kind of being pulled into this ongoing storyline where we have to take in different parts in order to get the whole picture, possibly.
Well, I've always felt that that comics as a tie-in to a movie were kind of just a little bonus and not really to be taken all that seriously. I mean, they're fun and it adds a little extra for the fans who really care and are interested, but I don't put a whole lot of stock in the stories and everything in the canon of the comics. Because quite often, a couple movies down the line, they'll completely rewrite that anyway, and then the comic is just not even, you know, relatable to it anymore. I mean, a lot of the old DC Star Trek comics were like that. When the movies were coming out, they would write what happened after the Wrath of Khan, and then, you know,
yeah,
2 years later they completely changed what happened with the new movie. You know,
yeah, in those situations you had different teams writing, though, right? You didn't have the team that's doing the movie wasn't involved in the comic. It's kind of like right. The novels, right? It's just totally whatever the writer wants to do off on their own.
It's definitely different now with that happening, but. You know, still, you know, like with the Countdown series before the first movie came out. I mean, that was an okay series, but it didn't have a whole lot to actually do with, you know, the movie before or that movie, I felt, even though they advertised it as tying them in together.
Mm-hmm. You didn't really need, I mean, you didn't miss anything watching the movie if you didn't read Countdown.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I really felt like Countdown was a really helpful addition to the movie. I always found that whole mind meld sequence with Spock and Kirk to be, it just goes by way too fast and doesn't really fill you in on what happened. And I feel like Countdown is for people who are, you know, wondering, like, wait, where did Nero come from? Like, when you're watching the movie, you can sort of just say, okay, he's a bad guy. He came out of the lightning storm. But Countdown, actually, I really felt like it went through and said, this is who Nero is. This is where he came from. Here's his motivation. And even though they didn't have time to get to that in the movie, the comic could show that. And so I actually really enjoyed Countdown. And I kind of consider it part of Star Trek canon.
Yeah. Did you read Countdown before the movie, or did you go back and read it after the movie?
I actually did read it after because I didn't know it existed being in Japan. Read it after.
I think I also read it after, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So it would have been interesting reading those going into the movie.
Yeah, going beforehand.
They might have confused me a little too much, just, you know, because then the movie starts and it doesn't have Nero at all. And, well, I mean, it sort of does, but, you know, it might be a little confusing considering. You don't know exactly when because of the overlapping timelines, you don't know where each thing lands where. So, but as far as see the movie and then read Countdown, I think they're really great and make a nice little pair. And I hope there's even more overlap coming up now that Orky is seemingly pretty involved in the new comic. I hope that means more than just, you know, I hope that means more than he just vetoes things. I hope he actually says, you know, we really should be doing this in the comic because this is what we're doing with the script.
Yeah. All right. And last question on this before we wrap up the show today. Do you think that this could be leading us towards another Star Trek television series in any way?
Well, I feel like the comic world is a weird beast. You know, sales of comics are not going to be a good indicator of success as a whole. I guess is what I'm trying to say is, you know, the audience for TV shows has to be gigantic. I mean, it's not cheap to make a comic, but it's a lot cheaper than to produce a weekly TV series. So, you know, maybe this can help gauge interest, and maybe if it really blows up, it might. But, you know, I really feel like the future of Star Trek ongoing is just to be a great thing for mega fans like us who really just want Star Trek all the time. And I do hope continues to be a successful book for IDW, but, you know, the idea of actually putting out the cash for a weekly Star Trek series in the current environment just doesn't seem possible from my point of view.
Not even if Stuart Baird wanted to direct it?
Oh, heavens. We're getting some face-palming from Mike here, so I think he agrees, right?
That's right. All right.
Yeah, I seriously doubt there will be a new television series anytime soon. It would be nice. I mean, I know we would all love it no matter what it was, but I think after they canceled Enterprise, it was a good sign that they're not going to do television for a long time.
Yeah.
Maybe we can think of Star Trek ongoing as sort of the Star Trek the animated series this decade. The quality is a lot higher than the animated series, so I'm happy to have it, even if it's only one issue a month.
That's true. Just tear out the pages and tape them to your TV. All right. Well, why don't we wrap up our discussion of this for today? Mike, I'm so glad you could join us today. It's great to have a comic mind in this discussion for sure.
No problem. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, why don't you tell everybody about where to find you and, of course, your very entertaining other Star Trek gig.
I'm in Five Year Mission. We are a Star Trek band based out of Indianapolis, Indiana. We are writing a song for every episode of Star Trek, the original series. We have one full-length album out, which is the first 16 episodes. And we are about to release the second album, which, of course, includes City on the Edge of Forever. So I know that one will be our platinum-selling album. you can find us at fiveyearmission.net. And, of course, we're on Facebook and Twitter as well.
Great. Well, I'm really looking forward to the release of year two. It's already, if I could pre-order it from iTunes, because it's easier for me to download, you know, being in Japan, I would have already done that. But very much looking forward to it, and looking forward to having you guys on the show sometime as we get closer to release as well.
Yeah, I will definitely come back and talk about the album and maybe give you a few more performances.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Well, that was a fun discussion of comics there, Greg. It's not something we get to talk about that often on this show. But as they're using it as a lead-in for the movies, maybe we'll have to touch on it a little bit more often.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about comics that makes it a little bit more exciting for me than the Star Trek books. I really love it, and especially love that it's the Abramsverse, since that's kind of the focus of Star Trek right now. Really enjoying reading this comic. I've been looking forward to it for a while, and it really impressed me, so I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it, and especially glad we got a chance to have Mike on it, a real comic book guy, like on The Simpsons.
Yeah, right, at the Android's Dungeon, is that right? All right. Well, for our listeners, if anyone has any thoughts on the comics, for sure, IDW reimagining original series stories, or how this might tie into the next movie, even. We'd love to hear from you. And you can, of course, visit our website, trek.fm/contact, and you can send us a message through there. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail, if you'd like, at 646-652-TREK. And you can find us over at Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. We've had some conversations going on over there as well. It's a really great forum for discussion. And as always, you can find us on Twitter. We're tweeting under username TrekFM, and I tweet from there, and Greg tweets from there as well, and we sign our messages with a hyphen C or hyphen G. I had someone ask me, Greg, the other day, what does hyphen C mean? And they were trying to figure out if it was like some kind of Star Trek tie-in, you know?
Right.
So,
really odd emoticon.
Yeah. So, but besides our main account there for Trek FM, Greg, you have your own Twitter account.
I do, and I probably tweet there a little bit more than from Trek FM at the moment. But yeah, you can reach me at Greg Harbin. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N.
Yep, and you'll find me on Twitter also. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And I tweet about Star Trek probably more from there than I think I do. And then I tweet about a lot of other things as well. So feel free to drop in there and chat with me about pretty much anything. All right, and while you're around our site, be sure to play Trek Trivia. We just have a new quiz up yesterday, actually. This one focuses on time travel. And we have a new badge that you can get as well if you get all the questions correct. And this is Bele from Charon from the episode Let That Be Your Last Battlefield. It's one of our more unique illustrations that we've done. And that's at trek.fm/trektrivia. And then during the week, you can also play with Mark Stamper and Anthony Davis on Twitter. Just follow username trektrivia for live quizzes several times a week. Well, Greg, I think I'm going to go and bury my head back in the Star Trek comics.
Yeah, Chris, I think it's time to stick a spokes candy in it, because the Ready Room is done.